Welcome everyone to episode number 28 of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me again,
it's Nick Morris. Hello everyone, how are you doing?
Good. Nick, how are you? How was your week, my friend?
You know what? It's been alright. I can't lie. I got a new car. 2013 Hyundai Tucson. What's up? Look for me out on the road. And I got a dope haircut this morning.
A dope haircut. Describe a dope haircut.
Well, it's I guess maybe a fresh cut. You know, what can I say? I always do the same haircut. I'm not crazy or anything. I'm not gonna go for a mohawk. But you know, just the usual Nick Morris hairstyle. Obviously, our listeners have no idea, but whatever, they can find out.
Well, ladies, you heard it here. The Nick Morris hairstyle, I'm sure it's wonderful. Would you say it's wonderful, Nick?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. We have some interesting things to talk about this week. I know interesting is a word I toss around a lot, but this is an important episode, at least for me, because Nolan is one of my favorite directors. We got a lot of Nolan coming up. We have some James Cameron news. Obviously, if it's me, it's going to be James Cameron news somewhere. Some trailers that I think are very artfully inclined. I think I found some trailers that to talk about that have a wonderful art style about them. Even though they kind of range in the content, I really enjoy the art style that they are in. We got some interesting things to talk about. I think most importantly is the Nolan legacy. So. Without further ado, jumping into the box office. Now, what's interesting, I think, about the box office this week is Dunkirk crushed. I didn't think it was going to. A second week in a row, I didn't think Dunkirk was going to do as well as it did the first week, but it really did. I'm very proud of the movie, or more or less, I'm happy that people are seeing it. It's a I'm happy that people are seeing it more than once. They have to be for this kind of number. So
yeah, see, that's what I was just thinking. I was like, well, there's probably people that have seen it maybe two or three times by now. And yeah, I gotta agree with you. I'm pretty glad that that's happening.
All right, Dunkirk is number one this week. Number one last week, and with a budget of $100 million. Again, no small budget. It's already made in 2 weeks, $234 million. That's right up there with the Nolan way of doing things. Is everything he does just make tons of money? And I mean, that's he by now deserves it. He commands such an audience that, I mean, even for me, I will watch a Nolan movie without even knowing anything about it. But that's hard to keep secret these days, given the internet and everything. It's hard to keep any movie under wraps these days, regardless of any studio attempt to do so. So that's the big number for Nolan's. I say this with a question mark. What was his masterpiece? I try to emoji movie. I don't really think. I don't really think many people are excited about this. I think it's just ill timed and. I think we're going to get more of that week. I was thinking about it. I saw it this week. We're going to get more into it next week. But I think that the movie is just ill-timed for it. But $50 million budget has just domestically made $25 million. So that's not a good start. But then again, it's only domestic. I have a feeling when it goes foreign, it's going to explode.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Girls Trip, number three this week. Number two last week, $19 million budget. $67 million, good for Girls Trip. That's, as you remember, that's Jada Pinkett Smith, Queen Latifah, and Regina Hall having some laughs. That's a good combination there for some laughs. And Lorenz Tate, the random guy thrown in. Atomic Blonde, number four this week, and it's the first week in the box office. Number four, $30 million budget. And so far as worldwide, pulled in $24 million. Not a bad start for something of that budget. What do you think? First thoughts on that, Nick? First thoughts.
I haven't seen it, obviously not yet. I hope to see it in the near future, but I probably it'll definitely make its money back in the next week, probably in these coming days, and yeah, I don't know. I feel like it'll be pretty good.
All right, there you have it from Nick. Atomic Blonde. I know. I think it'll be. It's got a good cast. Charlize Theron, James McAvoy, John Goodman. Those aren't nobodies. So I mean, those are really big names. So we'll see how that does next week. Well, it's already been out. We'll talk about it next week. But Spider-Man: Homecoming, number 5 this week, number 3 last week. Spider-Man still in the top 5. $175 million budget, $633 million worldwide. That's a good number. Although, I think it's less than what Sony was hoping for at this point. I really do think Sony was hoping to be at the 750 or 800 million mark by this point. Because it's not going to... I think its time is done as far as the hardcore fans watching it. I think those who have seen it have probably seen it twice or maybe three times, and they're moving on to other things such as Dunkirk. All right. Number 6 this week, number 4 last week, War for Planet of the Apes, what we talked about last week. Caesar's hopefully last movie, getting his apes a home. $150 million budget, $224 million worldwide. Not small potatoes.
Nope, not at all.
But you have to imagine with the $150 million budget, the advertising budget, it's never in the actual budget. It's got to be at least 75. So I don't think it's – I mean, I don't know. All the costs, maybe. It depends. It's that's a tough call. I don't know if it's made its money back completely, but I sure hope it has. I really enjoyed that one. Despicable Me 3, number 7 this week. 5 weeks. It's still at number 7. It's still holding strong. Good for Despicable Me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really putting up strong numbers still. That's – $80 million budget, that's $819 million worldwide. Not a small number.
No. Oh, my God.
Literally 10 times the number, so. Good for Despicable Me. I didn't think that franchise had much steam in it after Despicable Me 2. I thought people would be sick of it, but.
Yeah, I did too. I agree with you there. And, I mean, obviously, I think it's done after this one.
I would bet there's at least another Minions movie, and they're going to try to do another Despicable Me movie. I'd be willing to bet.
I hope there's another Minions movie, because I love the first one. My God. I'm 23 years old, and I enjoyed that movie.
Well, I mean, it's an enjoyable movie. It's fun to watch. You know, it's silly. It's supposed to make you laugh, and it does. So that is a very good thing. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Now, I've been saying for weeks this movie's not going to do much, and it hasn't. It's number 8, only been out for 2 weeks. Number 8, number 5 last week. Oh, jeez, Valerian. Falling short. $177 million budget. It only made $30 million worldwide.
Oh, God.
That's got to be some insurance claims. I mean, it's... That's gotta sting a little bit. It has to. That's a lot of money it didn't make back.
Yeah.
So.
I'm a little upset by that. I mean, I'm gonna see that movie probably Wednesday or something like that. But
we are gonna cover it next week. I always thought that Nolan should have his own episode. So Valerian, for those of you who like Valerian, we will cover it next week. The ups and downs. Hopefully more ups and downs, but we'll see.
Yeah.
The box office isn't speaking too strong for that one, so. I mean, Baby Driver, he's still driving, he's still a baby. Number 9, number 7 last week, still making money. $34 million worldwide, $34 million budget, $138 million worldwide. That's a damn good return for a movie of that budget.
Oh, yeah.
That's also a pretty good movie. As I'm thinking about movies throughout the week, my thoughts continually go back to Baby Driver of how good, of how much I enjoy those first couple scenes that are not cut very often.
Yeah, very true.
Those are
like I said last week. I thoroughly enjoyed Baby Driver, and I would have went and saw it in theaters again, but well, there's other movies. There's other movies to see, you know.
Oh, especially in the summer, man. There's never a lull of movies in the summer. It's a big movie every week, it seems.
Exactly.
Wonder Woman, number 10. Been out for 9 weeks. It's still in the top 10. Wonder Woman, she won't leave. She's still wonderful. That's a good thing. $149 million budget. $786 million worldwide. Didn't break the $1 billion mark. But still a very respectable number at $786 million. That's not small at all. Just, I think some things of note are Transformers is still 13. Cars 3, still in the top 12. That's number 12. That's all I see that I think is... Oh, Galaxy is still on number 19. That's been out for 13 weeks. That's a hell of a run for 13 weeks. That's still impressive that it's still in the top 20 after 13 weeks. Pirates is in the top 20 still after 10 weeks. Those are some notable ones still in the top 10 there. So your releases this week, or the previous for when this will be posted, is Emoji Movie, An Atomic Blonde, August 4th, Dark Tower, and Detroit. I gotta tell you, I'm so excited for both of those movies. I really can't wait to see with what she does with Detroit after doing Zero Dark Thirty, and what was the other one she did? Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker. Yeah, both very good movies. And she was married to James Cameron. in a way, it's like talking about James Cameron.
Always goes back to James Cameron.
Always, dude. He's my favorite, dude. He's the best. August 11th, Annabelle Creation. The Glass Castle, the 18th, which is coming up, Hitman's Bodyguard, August 25th, Polaroid and All Saints, and September 1st, Close Encounters of the Third Kind will be re-released. Nick, what do you think about that?
Oh, wow. I had no idea of that. That's awesome.
You think it's awesome, or is it just kind of cool?
I mean, it's kind of cool. I was a little overzealous about right there. I mean, it's a good movie. Wait, when did it come out? 70s, 80s?
I think it was 1978. I did not look that up, unfortunately. I didn't
prepare for that. I mean, it's pretty old, but I mean, hopefully, you know, some young kids will go out and say, hey, what's this all about? You know, I've never heard of this. Go see it. Maybe they'll enjoy it, you know?
Predictions. I always like to take a second look at predictions, given it may change based on... Your opinion may change based on what a certain movie is doing in the box office, but nothing has changed as far as... I think Atomic Blonde will do good. Will do great, actually. Dark Tower in Detroit will make tons of money. Annabelle, I don't think anyone cares anymore. It's a horror movie coming out in the wrong time. Or maybe not a horror, but like a thriller horror, but like it's coming out in the wrong time of the year for anyone to want to watch it, I think.
Yeah.
Hitman's Bodyguard will do obscene amounts of money, and Polaroid won't do anything at all, and Close Encounters probably won't do much, if anything. I think that's a generational thing, but...
Yeah.
Now, I have some cool things to talk about. So, John Powell will score the Han Solo Star Wars spinoff. He did The Bourne Identity, X-Men Last Stand, and How to Train Your Dragon. I loved How to Train Your Dragon and Bourne Identity. I thought those were two extremely good movies. I mean, both in their respective, you know, veins. They're not, you know. I was very surprised by How to Train Your Dragon, and I cannot wait for the third one. I love the second one, as dark as it was. I'm very excited for that. And X-Men Last Stand was kind of... the first X-Men was okay. Second X-Men was quite good. I know for a long time it was considered one of the best, if not the best, comic book movie made. That's probably changed quite a bit, given what we've had in the Marvel Universe lately. But
yeah.
And then The Last Stand kind of dropped the ball a little bit from the steam that the second one picked up. So we'll see where that goes. But he did, John Powell will do... Now, John Williams did Star Wars for the longest time, and he's not doing it anymore. So I think that's kind of cool that the baton has been passed in a way to, you know, a younger guy to score, you know. That's good. That's really cool. I didn't think Williams would ever let up on I didn't think he would ever like let up on that one. I think he would just kept doing it, but
yeah. I don't
know. How's that make you feel?
Do you think if John Powell does an amazing job at for Han Solo. Do you think he'll keep on with the series? Do you think they'll keep him on, or?
Well, I mean, it depends. He didn't do the second one, he didn't do the Rogue One. So, I mean, they didn't keep the guy from Rogue One, so maybe they didn't like his style. Maybe they will like John Powell, who knows. James Cameron, I was almost jumping for joy when I read this. It's not 100% confirmed, James Cameron, but he wants to reinvent a new Terminator trilogy. And what I say to that is it's about damn time, because it can't get any worse from where it is now. I'd almost given up hope that was ever going to get better. I'd almost consigned it to death, but I'm really excited about that. I love James Cameron. I love what he does. He is hell of a storyteller. He is a director that knows what he wants and he gets it. And no one says no to him. He's reached that level where you just don't say no to James Cameron. And maybe that's why he's being allowed to redo the Terminator, because everyone's afraid to say no to him. But where did the Terminator franchise take a wrong turn for you there, Nick?
What was the one where Christian Bale was in?
Christian Bale was in the... Ooh, that was the fourth one, Terminator Salvation.
That one was it, where he, I'm losing it a little bit, but, is that where he breaks into the animal hospital and, he's trying to get the medication?
No, that was the third one. That was Rise of the Machines. Yeah.
Okay. Then it was the third one then.
I actually didn't mind the third one, truth be told. As much as it wasn't what I wanted, it still stuck with the mythos, so I was kind of okay with it. And then Salvation came along and just pooped on whatever I thought was going to be cool, so, that is what it is. But,
yeah.
I mean, not often does... We have seen a return to... with Ridley Scott returning to Alien and he having some involvement with Blade Runner, the Blade Runner sequel. So that's really cool. I like it when directors come back to their properties. And it hasn't happened a lot, but it does happen. And these two are giving me hope again for the future of movies. Hayley Atwell, she has something to say about the movie Wonder Woman. And I bring this up because Hayley Atwell played Carter the first Captain America movie, and she was old in the second Captain America movie, and she is Agent Carter in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
Yeah, she is in, but she has, I think Hayley Atwell, what she says about the Wonder Woman movie holds some weight, because she is one of the few women that has been in a superhero movie lately, and she loved it. She said it was a triumph for women. I don't disagree with her at all. So, that movie was, I think it was a pretty solid movie, the Wonder Woman movie. And I had my problems with it. I was very vocal with them on the episode, and I continue to be when I, around the water cooler talk about Wonder Woman, but, my problems were not with the movie overall, they were just with, small parts, so.
Yeah.
What do you think of Wonder Woman, Nick?
I loved it. I thought... It was an introduction, obviously, to her backstory, and I thought they did a great job, and my God, I mean, it's Wonder Woman. It's everything that you want in a woman,
And she's wonderful. Yeah, no, I thought it was a very good movie. I'm glad that DC now has one good movie.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that.
Yeah, I'm really happy. Okay, now we have upcoming Disney movies and release dates. Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, comes out November 21st, 2018. Mark your calendar. An Untitled Planes sequel, April 12th, 2019. Frozen 2, November 27th, 2019. And a movie called Gigantic, November 25th, 2020. It's so weird to say, oh, 2020, like we're in 96 watching some sci-fi movie talking about the future, but we are almost there, Nick. We are
Couple
almost to
years, man.
2020. Yeah. I was reading a friend of mine sent me a text. So it was a picture text of he has a copy of The Postman with Kevin Costner, and the inside cover of the I think it's a Warner Brothers DVD. It says it is the year 2013. War has destroyed the planet. I'm like, no, it didn't. We're all still here. There's no postman. We lived through it. We're fine.
Yeah, we're good. We're all good, man.
I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was gonna be weird. We already lived through the postman date. Anne Hathaway is looking like she's gonna be in the Barbie movie. Amy Schumer left the project, but now Anne Hathaway has stepped up. Now, I think that's important for at least one reason of how important Barbie is to young girls and young boys, whoever wants to play with a Barbie. But I mean, that's such an iconic toy that do you remember that song, the It's a Barbie World and
I'm a Barbie girl,
In a
and
Barbie World? Yeah.
yeah, in a Barbie world, yeah.
I
Oh,
thought
yeah, I
that
know that
song
song.
came under a lot of fire because it almost sexualized Barbie in a way that it never should have been, only because it's such an icon of like young, mainly young girls. That's the demographic Barbie is young females.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they handle the movie. I'm sure it will not be like Sex and the City. I'm sure they'll be very careful of how in depth they go with the
Yeah.
Barbie movie. But we'll see. I mean, it's still a long way off, so.
Speaking of Anne Hathaway, I think it's just a rumor, and it probably is just a rumor, but I think they're making a I think they're in the works of making a Princess Diaries 3.
Oh my God, stop the presses.
Yeah.
Stop the presses. Princess Diaries 3 is on the way. Nolan, move over. Dunkirk, no. Princess
Just a
Diaries 3.
rumor, just a rumor, everyone.
I mean, that's I think those movies are fun. I think they're fun to watch. I watched one when I was, I think, 17, the first Princess Diaries. I
Yeah.
don't know. Maybe I've got the date wrong, but or maybe it was the second Princess Diaries where I don't remember, but I watched one of them. I was in high school, and I remember laughing a lot. Bryce Dallas Howard, daughter of Ron Howard, Academy Award nominee Ron Howard, is going to direct Sort of Like a Rock Star. That is, it's about a young teen, Amber, who gets kicked out of the house with her mom and dog and finds reasons to stay optimistic even though tragedy keeps striking. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a neat premise.
I love and hate when I both love and I hate when people get the opportunity to move up in the film industry based on who their parents are. In this case, I love it. In most cases, I
Yeah.
hate it. But Ron Howard is a good director. He makes solid movies. He made what I think is one of the best movies I've ever seen, is Cinderella Man. Those of you may disagree, but I that's a hell of a movie about the triumph of the human spirit, and Russell Crowe nails it. Ron Howard nails it. I mean, I'd even go so far to say it's one of the best in the past 20 years, one of the top five for me. That's my personal opinion, but that's in my top five in the past 20 years. So we'll see if she can hold it down like her father can. He's had some. I remember not liking the Moby Dick movie. What was that? It was. I don't remember the name, but
See,
I remember.
in the heart of the
Oh yes,
sea.
In the Heart of the Sea. That's right. I remember not liking it at all. Actually, being very disappointed. But then again, you never know what gets out of his control, what is in his control. I don't think he's one of those directors that he can do whatever he wants. So I think he's still very closely tied to, studio. So that is, we'll see if she can capture some of the magic that she's learned from maybe her father. Who knows? Trailers. So last week we talked about Christopher Nolan not liking ex Netflix very much, and going on about how he thinks it ruins the experience of going to the theater, seeing it on a big screen, seeing it with that, or hearing it with that sound. He thinks that he's not a big fan of Netflix versus the theater way of presenting movies, and I got to agree with him on that one. But, excuse me, this one, this trailer for Bright with Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, I'm really excited for, until I saw it was a Netflix original, and then I didn't get excited. But I thought that was, to myself, I don't know if I'm a product of maybe because Nolan doesn't like, because of how much I like Nolan and doesn't like Netflix, maybe that's why I saw Netflix and like, oh, I don't like it anymore. Or, you know, like some kind of conditioning, but I,
yeah.
This trailer is an odd one, but well, it's.
Yeah, it is. I mean, don't lie to him. It's weird. It's a little edgy. I think it's cool. I don't know. What did you think?
Well, to me, it changed tones a few times. It starts out kind of serious, and then it goes into, then I was like, oh, this is a comedy. And then it went back to serious again. So those are some major tonal shifts to go through. And I hope the movie doesn't do that, like, such a big swing like that. But, I mean, trailers can, because, it's, I mean, you're just trying to get the essence of the movie. So perhaps it is a more serious dramedy, or yeah. It's a more serious dramedy, or it's a more funny dramedy. I mean, I don't know how you'd say that, but
I feel like there will be a lot of undertones too for this movie, like a lot of unspoken truths, or
something
it's, along the lines of that.
Well, it is Netflix, so they're a young studio still. So I don't really know what their political agenda is, but I mean, yeah, you're not wrong in there. There could be some of that. In order to sign on Will Smith, though, I feel like there has to be some kind of social significance to it, or he wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
He is a man now that can pick and choose what he wants to do, and he definitely would have said no had he not seen some kind of benefit to this for his career.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll notice, it's not really Men in Black. It's you know, one step past it. It's Will is a cop, and in this universe where Will's a cop, they have these, well, I mean, there's
like, they're creatures, they're like, I don't know, they're, it's kind of hard to explain, because they're, would you call them ghouls or something? I don't know.
They live among people, and Will gets one as his partner as a cop. And there apparently are lots of people that are, I guess, of, you know, just not human, you know, either called a beast or an alien or magic user or whatever. And they come across this thing that they have to keep out of the hands of this stick. This, what do they call the stick? I didn't even remember what they called the stick. I didn't have trouble with this. This thing that grants wishes or grants what your desires. And in order to keep it from falling in the wrong hands, these two must keep it out, keep it away from the bad guy. That's kind of what I got from the trailer. But it looks like, and I guess in that very way, there is going to be social commentary. I mean, obviously, because, you know, who is the monster and who is not the monster, and who is human and who's not human, I guess will be some of the themes hit. The Shape of Water. Director Guillermo del Toro brings us another, what looks to be kind of a Hellboy-ish meets Hellboy meets The Cure for Wellness meets another one. I don't exactly know what. What did you? Sorry, what did you think of it?
I don't know. Yeah, I thought the trailer was absolutely crazy, and I mean, it looks so neat, you know.
It looks like exactly how you'd think this movie directed by Guillermo del Toro would look.
Yeah, exactly.
Art style looks like it was borrowed from Hellboy. Obviously, there's some heavy Hellboy designs with this fish creature.
Yeah.
There's some Pan's Labyrinth designs with, I think, some of the wardrobe and some of the sets. So we'll see how he integrates his past and with his future, given that's a theme of this week, you know, legacy. But it's about a girl who is mute and talks to this creature which is being held beyond, against its will, and they are able to communicate. And what's more is there might actually be feelings being developed. And Michael Shannon is a scientist who thinks that's probably not the best thing, tries to stop it. Among the cast also, Sally Hawkins and Octavia Spencer, Richard Jenkins. It's been a while since I've seen him in something that I really liked, but hopefully I'll really enjoy this. And Wind River by director Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario and Hell or High Water. This looks to be not your average psychological thriller. Nick, what did you say you saw this or you didn't see this?
I don't believe I saw it. I'm looking at it now, but no, I don't think I saw this.
Yet. Okay. Jeremy Renner is in this with Elizabeth Olsen and Kelsey, I'm going to mispronounce this and I'm sorry, Aspill, I don't know how to say that, but Elizabeth Olsen, as you remember, is one of the twins from the Marvel movies. Her brother is the Flash, the Flash, the guy who goes super fast.
In Marvel?
In the Avengers movies.
Oh.
Yeah, well, that's, Elizabeth Olsen now is, this is a regular role for her, and not a superhero, which is kind of cool, but it's a, it takes place in a remote part of the country, and there's a kidnapping, and they're trying to find someone, and it's nothing is what it seems, is what it's going to turn out to be. Now, I'm attracted to this for the simple reason that Jeremy Renner is hell of an actor, and I think he, like Will Smith, does not choose bad projects, at least not now. I mean, he did Wild Wild West, so he can't say he never chose bad projects, but...
Oh, man, I loved that movie as a kid.
Well, it's fun to watch, but I mean, it's not good at all.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see how it goes. We will see how it goes. Now, moving on a little bit. Christopher Nolan made a little movie. I don't know if you heard of it. Dunkirk.
Huh. I thought that was a battle. They made a movie of that?
Who's Christopher Nolan? What has he made? Well, I'll tell you, Nick, what he's made. He has made... Now, Christopher Nolan, his legacy is quite impressive, and his filmography is what he's made. 1998, Memento. He directed and wrote it. That came out in March of 98. $6,000 budget, made $48,000. A Rotten Tomatoes score of 92%. 2002, Insomnia. He directed and wrote it. I think he did the screenplay. Maybe he didn't write it. So he did the screenplay. It came out in May of 2002. $46 million budget, $113 million worldwide gross. Not bad. 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. 2005, Batman Begins. He directed that one, obviously. June of 2005, it came out. $150 million budget, $374 million worldwide profit. Sorry, worldwide box office, and 84% Rotten Tomatoes. Those were his first three, Nick. Of those three, which do you like best?
I've actually never seen Memento or Insomnia.
You never seen Memento? I can understand Memento, because I think that's one of his movies that the least amount of people have seen. But I cannot forgive Insomnia. that's my personal favorite Nolan movie, is Insomnia. Al Pacino and... Well, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Oh, man. Wonderful cast. Just absolutely wonderful, wonderful. Woo. Just it gives me shivers thinking about it.
I'm going to look that up, actually.
Yeah, definitely watch that. The Prestige, 2006, came out in October. $40 million budget. $109 million worldwide. That's not as good as I remember it being. But, I mean, as far as box office, not... You know, movie, but box office. 76% Rotten Tomatoes. That's the lowest score so far. Not happy about that, but 2008, we get into The Dark Knight. That came out in July. $185 million box office. $185 million budget. I can't speak tonight. $185 million budget. $1 billion in box office. Try to imagine that many zeros behind any of your paychecks. Just try. 94% Rotten Tomatoes. That is his highest Rotten Tomatoes score movie. Now, that's, to me, that's not, I don't agree with Rotten Tomatoes scores that one. That one is actually one of my lesser favorites of all the Nolan movies. Believe it or not, I just...
Wow, really?
The Dark Knight, yeah. That's, doesn't mean it's the worst, it just means it's yeah. It's on the bottom half, for me anyway. Out of my personal, it's for me. Inception, 2010. $260 million budget. $825 million worldwide intake. That's a great number. Almost in the billion-dollar club, but not quite. But he's already been in there once for The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, which came out in 2012. Now, the Inception rating was 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Dark Knight Rises, 2012, came out in July. $250 million budget, just over $1 billion in the box office. You know Warner Brothers was happy with that return, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
87% Rotten Tomatoes. Don't agree with that one either. Interstellar came out in November of 2014. I don't think the hype could have been any higher at that for a Nolan movie.
Yeah, very true.
At that point, I don't think it could have been any higher for that. $165 million budget, $675 million worldwide box office, 71% Rotten score or Rotten Tomato score. That's the worst of all of them in Rotten Tomatoes. And Dunkirk, 2017, came out in July, $100 million budget, so far has done $235 million. Again, that's not a small number. It's only going to go up from there. 93%. That is his highest Rotten Tomatoes score. Again, that's not one that I agree with. If you're going by Rotten Tomatoes, if you're going to rank him by Rotten Tomatoes, I don't agree with that at all. But again, that's my personal, can you name a director you've watched their movies more than Christopher Nolan?
Quentin Tarantino.
You watch Tarantino movies more than Nolan movies?
Oh, yeah.
Which Tarantino movie is your favorite?
Pulp Fiction, of course.
Pulp Fiction. I do like Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, those are very high on my Tarantino list.
I've probably seen Pulp Fiction upwards 30 times. I don't know, somewhere around there. I've definitely watched it more times than I'm glad to admit.
Wow, that's a lot of Tarantino viewings.
That's a lot of hours. It's not a short movie.
That's for sure a lot of hours. Now these are of course the ones available on my phone and on DVD Blu-ray. Interstellar and Back. I probably watched it one of these. Of these, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Of these 8 movies, I mean, that's Memento up to Interstellar, I probably watched them a combined total of 65 or 70 plus times. I'm not kidding you. I watch Nolan movies like I'm being paid to. It's ridiculous. But
I will say, I mean, Memento and Insomnia are the only 2 I haven't seen of his movies. And I'm definitely going to check out Insomnia. What do you think? What's your ranking of all these Nolan movies? What's your best? What's your favorite?
Well, man, there are very few things in my head that shuffle around like the rankings of Nolan movies. Let me tell you something. But Insomnia, I think, is my favorite.
Okay.
That's always going to be my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Of all the movies, post Memento, because before that he had The Following, which was I didn't really put that on my list, but it's that was his like first actual feature, but before Memento. No, I got the numbers wrong. The Falling was 6K as a budget, made 48K. That's my mistake.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't know why I wrote that down. That's not for Memento. That was for The Following. Sorry, I made that mistake. But for all the movies, that's a tough one. I did not do the list because, well, did you do a list? Let me ask you that.
I haven't. I definitely thought about it. But, I mean, obviously I haven't seen Memento or Insomnia. Out of all of them, it's tough. very tough to, like you said, put a ranking on them.
Go ahead.
Inception. I love Inception. My God. It's a great movie.
It is. It's a very good movie.
I remember seeing Interstellar for the first time. I watched that with my brother and my grandparents. And at the end, I was blown away because it was just... I thought it was a great movie, but my grandfather, once it ended, he was like, that movie couldn't be any shorter? Oh, man. I don't
know. Well, most Nolan movies are pretty long. In his defense, they're pretty long. So
he gets the point across, though, you know, and it's enjoyable. I think the only thing I questioned about Interstellar was Matt Damon being on Mars. Or was he on... No, he wasn't on Mars, was he?
I don't know what planet... I forget what planet they went to that where he was, but he was the one that hit the button for... there's resources there, and then it ended up being... Yeah. That whole Matt Damon thing, I think, could have been cut out completely. It's just... That always blows my mind about why his role even exists. I mean, I guess to show what happens when you run out of hope. Like, when hope's gone completely, what happens? But, I mean, that's because the movie is about... I mean, on a lesser degree, hope.
Yeah.
So, that's... True. I think with some clever editing and a little bit of rewrites, they could have done away with that character altogether and cut out 20 minutes of that movie, 25 minutes. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. My top three Nolan movies, and they juggle in my head all the time. Like, it's crazy how often these juggle. But my top three, and now this is personal, the ones I enjoy the most. Insomnia, I think, is his best. And I always say that I think it's his most grounded of all of them. It's the one with the least supernatural things going on. There's nothing supernatural going on. It's just man against man, and it's one of those amazing movies because I remember watching it and thinking that, wow, this guy can make a damn movie. For sure. I was 17 when I watched that in 2002. I remember loving seeing it, like going on and on about it to my friends. And of course, none of them saw it because they were all too involved in other things. But my top three, jeez. You know, I'm going to do top four only because I want to include Dunkirk.
Uh-huh.
Only because I'm on the fence about it.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with my top three as... And my top four are Insomnia. Insomnia is, I think, okay, so four back. The worst of what I'm saying of the four back. Batman Begins, Dunkirk, The Prestige, Insomnia. Those are worst to best top four.
Okay.
I'm never going to budge on the Insomnia. That's my favorite Nolan movie of all time. But that's what I love. So going into it, it's very difficult to talk about a Nolan movie without talking about his past movies because he uses a lot of the same techniques. He uses a lot of the same people. He's incredibly high production value. He loves representing, I guess the Nolan way of filmmaking and everything he does. That's his legacy. And I always thought that in The Prestige, it starts and ends with what I think he was talking about. I've had so many discussions on this, but the parts of a magic trick in The Prestige, he talks about the pledge, the turn, and the prestige. And the pledge is when you present something and you know it's going to become more than what it is. The turn is where the trick gets a little more difficult. You know, there might be an obstacle or something might affect the trick. And then the prestige is when you bring it back. Because if you remember, Michael Caine's character in The Prestige says, making something disappear is not enough. You have to bring it back. And I've always thought that, given that, especially in my household growing up, Nolan was always, you know, heavily discussed between my father and myself and any friends that would join in the discussion. And I remember we're seeing The Prestige, and on the way home, we were talking about those three things, a pledge to turn The Prestige, and how they are easily... the three acts of a movie, you know, the boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. They are respectively the Pledge, the Turn, the Prestige. And it sets up the Batman trilogy wonderfully because the Pledge, obviously, is Batman when you're presented with Bruce Wayne becoming more than a man, becoming a symbol. So that's the Pledge. The Turn is the Dark Knight, which is the Joker introducing complete anarchy. In the beginning of the Dark Knight, they talk about how the streets have been cleaned up, and someone even makes the comment that, oh, you're going to be out of a job because there's no one to catch. So the Turn is the Joker bringing complete anarchy to the order. And then the ending, the Prestige, is when you have to bring it back, comes into play with Bruce Wayne as Batman, both of them coming, they find a way to, they are completely taken out of it and then find a way to come back. So that's kind of what I thought was an interesting way in the Prestige that, although we talked about the Prestige based on, no, I'm getting my timeline mixed up because the Dark Knight hadn't even been out yet, but we talked about the Prestige as the parts of a movie. That's what it was, parts of a movie. And then when we saw Dark Knight, the Dark Knight Rises, that's when we brought up the Prestige again because we'd seen all three. Okay, that's what it was. I'm getting my timeline wrong. But
which you completely blew my mind with that Batman trilogy, Pledge, Turn, and Prestige a little bit right there.
People talk about it. If you talk about Nolan in a room full of people, someone's gonna bring it up. So I mean that's a thing. But I remember talking about the three parts of a movie. And then later, when the Batman trilogy finished, that again discussing it again, how that was, that was interesting. I always call the Batman trilogy the first trilogy, and I call Insomnia, The Prestige, and Inception as the second trilogy. And now we're starting the third trilogy with Dunkirk. Or how's it? The second trilogy is Insomnia, Prestige, and Interstellar. Why am I getting my movies mixed up? Not Interstellar. I'm getting my movies mixed up. Jeez, this is embarrassing. Insomnia, Prestige, and Inception. And then the second trilogy would be Interstellar, Dunkirk. And I think he's doing a Western. I think that might be his next one now that he's not doing Bond, is a Western. So maybe that's the third trilogy. I don't know. But I'm confusing myself with all these Nolan movies. Which brings the question, where do The Following and Memento fit in, if they even fit in? I don't even know if they do. I don't think he's even aware of – I don't think he was thinking about that early.
Yeah.
But you've never heard that before,
that's the first time I've ever heard of that.
Oh, wow. I've heard that quite a bit, actually. And I've heard all kinds of different – I mean, if you in Google type in – Christopher Nolan theory or trilogy theory, all kinds of stuff pops up. But because people love to dive into his movies, but I mean, it's I don't think any more past that, because that is just that's the furthest that I'm willing to go with it as far as because I mean the further you go, the more brilliant he gets. I'm like, there's no way anyone's that brilliant. I don't know, maybe I'm just wrong. And I've also had a conversation with him, which kind of shed some light on a lot of things for me as far as Nolan. And I just like, wow, what this man is just amazing. But, you know, maybe he could. Now, Dunkirk is a movie with historical significance. And 1940... the British and the French have been pushed back all the way to the beaches of Dunkirk, and Nazi Germany has, in 1 year, taken all of that country. And then, for some reason, Hitler does not give the command to attack with his tanks, but a different kind of... that's one of the bigger mysteries, I think, in World War II, is why he didn't just annihilate them when he could have.
Yeah, that I totally agree with you right there. a complete mystery. I mean, you think he probably could have took the beach at Dunkirk, but what he said, why do that when you can pick him off like flies or something like that? They said that in the movie.
Yeah, I think Kenneth Branagh says, why waste precious tanks when you can shoot them like fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
So that's it. So the way this movie opens, I think, is brilliant. It's It has a couple of British soldiers walking along the streets in these pamphlets falling down. Asking them to surrender or they will be dead from the Germans. And it opens in a way that's so immediate, it puts you right with them. And that I have to respect because everything most things in this movie were different. For as far as what I was expecting from Nolan, it was different because he's usually the guy that, you know, doesn't not show anything. He shows every side of the, you know, he just boom, boom, boom. Let's you know, huge production value, show the fights, do everything. And in this one, he didn't do any of that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting choice. I didn't see it coming, truth be told. Didn't see it coming at all about never actually seeing any huge combat scenes or just...
Yeah. And more or less, it puts you in the scene of, you know, is there gonna be a huge battle or is there not? Or, but more it's the way Nolan does it. It's more intense, you know. It leaves you sitting on the edge of your seat, waiting for something to happen. But I mean, you don't really get that something, but you're not disappointed at the same time. I know I wasn't.
No, you're not. And it's by doing that, it makes it more intimate in that way of. Internalizing if World War II had a struggle, if like World War II as a whole conflict had a struggle, he does a very good job of internalizing it as if the British trying to get off the beach was a character in a book, like one character was all the British troops trying to get off the beach, like this is his internal struggle of, you know, it's not the, it's the waiting that's the worst and it's the terror and it's the, you know, worst possible circumstance has happened, and now what do you do? So that's what I admired most about it is Nolan took the simple approach to this movie, and by taking the simple approach, it's actually a very complex movie to dive into because you have so many layers. You have the different – in true Nolan fashion, he jumps around in the timeline, or at least – well, in this one, he does. He jumps around the timeline quite a bit, but
yeah. I mean, obviously, I like the first when he was first doing that. I was a little off balance in the theater. I was trying to visualize what was actually happening, you know, in my mind and you know how it's happening. But you can't. You know, you just gotta watch and. Let it show you what's happening on the screen, you know. Let Nolan do Nolan, I guess.
Well, he's very good at doing Nolan. I mean, he's proved time and time again he's very good at it. He knows how to tell a story. He knows how to really emphasize parts of struggle. For example, he breaks it into three parts: the mole, the sea, and the air. And the mole, what kills me is why he calls it the sea and the air, but why doesn't he call the land portion the land instead of we call it the mole? But, you know, I was trying to think, there's some significance as, I've thought for a brief moment, well, a mole is a little animal that, you know, is a mole, and that's not it. So then there's a comment somewhere in there someone makes about, I think it's the pier that all the soldiers are on, extending out into the ocean.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's I was in a very crowded theater. And I could not write anything down because I could not use my flashlight. But it's they refer to it as the mole, which is the ground part.
here, correct? I don't know if you remember, but no spoiler alerts here. Actually, a little bit. When they're in the boat and they're all like the boat that's in on the beach that's washed up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that scene at all.
When they're in it and the Germans are shooting at it.
Yeah. And they're figuring out someone who should get out, you know, and they all turn on that one guy and maybe he's the mole, you know.
Well, that's what they call a spy,
is yeah, exactly,
the mole.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. Well, that's got to refer to that. I mean, it has to be.
Exactly.
But it's the enormity of what's going on. I think is that's the brilliant part that people are going to, I think, realize later after this movie has been in the theater and gone, and then Blu-ray and DVD. I think then it's going to really hit people how great this movie is. Now I say that. Is it his masterpiece? With a question mark, because I don't. I need more time with it. Like, I need more time with it in my brain for it to stew. But anyway, so it starts with a couple of boys, as they call them, walking along the streets, and then they're collecting these pamphlets that are falling from the air, and then they you hear shooting, and one of them is shot, and then they all take off running. And by the time one of them gets over the fence, there's only one out of four left, and he's on the run. And then that is how you perceive the advancing Nazi forces, the Germans, are you never actually see them. And I thought that was quite brilliant.
It was exactly what you just said. It was brilliant the way Nolan did that because – I mean, really, you don't see any Nazis, or, you know, you don't really see much combat between them, except for up in the air, of course.
That, my point there is that it makes it scarier. It really heightens what they're up against.
Exactly, yeah.
Because in it, the title card flashes a few times in the beginning of, they've been pushed back to the beach, and they're just hoping to be evacuated. And that's what I think is the cool part, because if you never see it, then they always talk about the perimeter being around the evacuation site. But if you never see them, and they're always – the camera's looking one way, and then the Germans are always – the pursuers are always behind you. Like, that almost puts us in that situation with them of trying to get out.
Exactly.
You know, that feeling of surrounded, you know, claustrophobia, kind of, even though they're on a beach, like, it's still like maybe he was going for that heightened sense of putting you in their situation or trying to put you in there with them, you know, share that struggle, which I think is kind of really awesome.
Mm-hmm. He definitely nailed that. And like you were saying earlier, the first 5 minutes are just – they truly are amazing. And I know I was feeling it when one of the characters caught one of the flyers and it said, you know, Nazi Germany is surrounding you. You know, we're pushing you to the beach. You know, you're there and we're coming for you. That, to me, that was like, wow. Okay, let's get started with this movie.
Like, it starts immediately, like, from the very first frame, it puts you in the same, like, it puts you in there with them, surrounded and trapped. And that was what I found to be, the fact that he accomplished that, I found that to be extremely fascinating.
Yeah.
Which brings me to a point I wanted to make earlier, but didn't, when talking about his movies all making tons of money and all being relatively high in the Rotten Tomatoes score is and all being very well received by, is it's hard to believe that one man made all these and wrote most of them. And, you know, he keeps turning out wonderful movie after wonderful movie, and it's just that's the hard to believe part. That's the part that I think is really, really amazing on his part. But, and I've said it before, I know there'll be at least one who says to me, well, you always say you expect better from him, and well, I do. Nolan's one of the first directors I fell in love with when I was started watching movies heavily in a movie theater is Insomnia. Like, I'm like, holy crap, that guy can tell a story. And his use of, like, very shallow depth of field and the darks and the lights, his wonderful use of, and you'll see, when you watch Insomnia, you'll see it, you'll hear it, as a matter of fact, his wonderful use of music and how it's always a very slow build. It's almost what Michael Mann used to do, was use the deep reflecting music to really reel you in at parts and really, like, kind of help you come down from that combat high that you just had. Or there's several chase scenes in Insomnia that they're so intense, and all of a sudden there's not, and then it's the sweeping score just comes in, and it's like, it helps you come down from that. It's just like, that was wonderful. So yes, I expect wonderful things from Nolan. I'm willing to bet this movie gets nominated for some Oscars too. I'd be willing to bet.
I guarantee that.
So I could see it winning. Well, no, winning is, that's a far stretch. I can see it being nominated for cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
I can see it being nominated for a couple other things too. I don't know. What do you think?
Maybe costume. I mean, I think he did a wonderful job. Or, well, whoever did the costumes for the soldiers. I mean,
well,
I thought it was.
They were pretty basic World War II uniforms, but I mean.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it, you know, it fit the knit, I guess. And,
Production design was pretty spot on. I really enjoyed that too.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing with Nolan movies, it always is. It's never not spot on. So that's what I really enjoy about the Nolan movies, is the incredible production value you know you're going to get when you go into a Nolan film. And Dunkirk is no different. So we have the mole, the sea, and the air. And the mole is the ground evacuation. The sea is when they bring it, when they rally people to use their smaller vessels on the other side of the channel, across the pond, as the Brits I worked for on The Dark Knight Rises called it. They called it across the pond. To help evacuate. And boy, that's its own separate story from the mole is the sea. And then the air, when Tom Hardy's character is up in the air, him and his few wingmen are trying to hold off the German Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, and the Stuka dive bombers coming in,
I think you'd agree that, I mean, Nolan could have made his own trilogy from those three different stories. You know, I mean, they were done so good that you just think that he could have made three individual movies about the three different stories. You know, but I mean, obviously, made Dunkirk, and it was wonderful.
You know, you might be right about that. There may have been a conversation, to be a fly on the wall in some of these boardrooms, let me tell you. There may have been a conversation where someone's like, hey, well, how about multiple movies? And he was like, no. And they said, here's how that conversation went down. They said, how about a trilogy? And he said, no.
I ain't got time for that.
Or he just looked at him like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? No, he doesn't. I think how we split it up, it can be a little confusing, especially when you – that because the couple times you really know there's been jumping around in the timeline is the boat.
Yeah.
Because you see the boat go over and then it's not over, and then – or it's floating again, and then you see them – because you see them hopping out of it pretty early in the movie, and then you see them hopping out of it again, and you're like, that can't be the same boat. You see Cillian Murphy, after they've picked him up, after the three fishermen we follow, the older guy, the older gentleman and his son, and George, go over, as he says, we're going to war. After they go over and they find Cillian Murphy's character, he is sitting on a downed plane, but then after we catch him there, we see a flashback of him.
Yeah, going down.
Of him telling people they can't get in the boat, and they have to wait for the next one at night. So then you know there's some kind of weird, some time splitting going on, which isn't a bad thing. It's just
no.
It's using it's the advantage there is you get to highlight really emphasized parts of the story. And of course that's always preferred for me, and I love, you know, powerful moments.
You said it was Killian. I always thought it was Cillian Murphy.
Oh, is it Cillian Murphy? It might be.
That's how I always pronounced it. I thought he did a wonderful job acting.
Yeah.
And I've always been a fan of him.
Yeah. Well, he's been in several Nolan movies now. He was in all the Batman. Well, he was in, yeah, he was in all three Batman movies. He was in this. So yeah, I mean, he's been in. There are several people that have crossed over in many different Batman movies. Ken Watanabe did, or Watanabe. He did. Christian Bale did. Michael Caine did. I don't think Morgan Freeman did.
Yeah.
Michael Caine did. Several people. So Marion Cotillard, she was, wasn't she? She was in Dark Knight Rises, and she was in Inception. Yeah, Inception as his wife. Yeah, there's several people, and that's one thing I love. I love about Nolan's legacy. He uses a lot of the same people, but they are good.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, you can almost, when he announces a movie, you can almost guess who the cast is going to be, or at least some of the cast members. You can almost guess before they're even announced. You can, well, this guy's going to be in it. Probably him. Probably him. Probably her. And that's what I always loved about his legacy too. So we have The Mole, the Sea, and the Air. The more intriguing part I always thought in the movie, the one I was Tom Hardy's, was the Air, was Ferrier, the character of the pilot trying to fend off the German fighters from doing extensive damage to the ships carrying some of the troops, some of the soldiers. And he uses, what's interesting is he doesn't know how much fuel he has left, and he keeps asking his wingman at one point, let me know how much fuel we have so we know we have to turn around. And you see him mark it on his dashboard several times because his gauge has been broken.
Yeah.
And that's how we kind of condense the time for Tom Hardy is, you know what I mean, he only has so much fuel. There's only so much he can do. That's again, that's the whole time theme with Nolan is, you know, he's really putting a clock on how long he can be in the air.
Yeah.
So I really, really love that as well.
Another thing with the time, you know, I didn't find it irritating while I was watching the movie, but it was the tick tock of that pocket watch, you know, and a little tidbit. I think from what I heard, probably just another rumor I'm spreading. I think that was Nolan's, I think that was his own pocket watch that they used.
I don't doubt it. I mean, I don't doubt it at all.
Classic Nolan and his pocket watch.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, that sounds it's a trick he used in the Batman movies, you know, building tension on some scene, like especially in the last installment of the Batman franchise was when they were getting ready to fight. It was the dun 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 dun, you know, the building up to. And this, I think what I enjoyed most about this movie was it was almost an entire build up from beginning to end of getting, you know, flying. It started with complete and utter despair, and then it just kind of slowly, like even the music slowly built up to, you know, the end. I don't want to say what happens because it's there might be some people out there who haven't seen it yet. I can't imagine you not seeing a Nolan movie.
I mean, Grayson, it's a historical event, you know. If people haven't heard of this, what are they even doing with their life?
Now you're trying to sound like me. I'm trying to be a little less like that these days, but I mean, I don't. Nolan's one of those. If there's a Nolan movie out, you have to watch it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You can't not watch it. Because he makes movies for people who like movies. It's that simple because he loves movies. So it's, you know, so it puts the viewer in the action. It does a good job of really keeping the tension there and never letting it go. And another thing I love was there's almost no dialogue in this movie.
Yeah, it's I think the first words were, where's the bloody Air Force or something like that.
Yeah, one of the soldiers in line. Yeah, where's the Air Force? I think I read somewhere that a long time ago when it was still shooting, it was only like the script was less than 80 pages or something, or less than X number of pages. And I thought, oh, how's he gonna pull a 3-hour movie out of that? We'll find out, I guess. Because you know Nolan always making long movies. But man, this is. To me, it's Dunkirk is right in line with his past movies, and it's very different in the same way. So he uses, you know, he brings back some familiar cast.
Yeah.
He brings back Tom Hardy again behind a mask, again hard to understand half the time. I just wanted to say that he was Gotham's Reckoning. That's all I wanted to say in this movie was,
yeah.
I am Gotham's Reckoning. Thanks, Tom Hardy. So there's, go on, sorry.
Let's take a moment, just beautiful shots in this movie.
Yeah, cinematography is never second in a Nolan movie, never.
God, when, especially when, we get up and we're in, you know, the cockpit of where Tom Hardy is, you know, we're looking at the sea and, oh man, just brilliant, brilliant cinematography.
Yeah, really, really wonderful shots. Like, especially those wide shots of the ocean. And oh my God, I can't imagine any of that stuff is green screened. He's not really a big fan of that, but
yeah,
I mean, it could be. You never know. It really could be. They could have done it in some studio, but it didn't look like it was. So I'm just gonna go with it wasn't, and hope that I'm right because it looks beautiful. And did you? How many times did you watch Dunkirk?
I've only seen it once, and I saw it. I didn't see it in 70mm, which I'm still kicking myself, and you know I'm still thinking about finding that theater. I believe it's playing up in Pittsburgh at the AMC theaters.
Yeah, probably Lowe's.
70mm. So I'm definitely thinking about going to see it in 70mm. Heard it's a lot louder, but it looks better. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it when I went and saw it. Regular, just regular screen, you know. I didn't have a problem with it.
I mean, most people don't. And, I mean, once you're in the movie, you probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But everything is a little better on a 70mm print.
Yeah.
I prefer watching film prints anyway to digital because there's just something lost in digital distribution than there is in film print. So that was just it to me. I mean, I saw the theater I went to, it was not 70mm IMAX, but it was 70mm, and it was damn impressive. The picture was amazing. The sound quality was awesome.
What was it loud? Because I mean, I've been seeing a lot of people, they've been, you know, a lot of tweeting about how loud it is. And, I mean, I didn't think it was too loud.
But I think a lot of people, there were some people in front of me. Again, I was in a very packed theater, but there were some people in front of me that were using their hands to when the German Stukas, the dive bombers, would come down. Yeah. Like that sound was really loud, but I think it was loud. I mean, I think it was amplified on purpose. To almost try to put you in that situation.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being on a boat trying to get out and seeing one of those things just bearing down on you, knowing it's going to drop a bomb? Like, can you just imagine? So Nolan was like, well, how do I make them in the theater feel like that? Well, let's amplify the sound so you hear the dive bomber really, really well.
Exactly. And I mean, hats off to Nolan.
So I thought that was pretty cool. That was really, really quite. So this, I'm hoping this is the second movie in his third trilogy. So, I'm hoping if the first movie in the third trilogy is Interstellar, I'm hoping this is the second movie in the third trilogy, which would be with theme as far as the trilogies go. But I'm willing to bet that there'll be another one in 2019. I'd be willing to say 2019. I don't know what it is, but I don't think anyone knows what it is. But
is that the Western you're referring to?
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know for a fact it's going to be a Western.
exactly. It could be anything. You're right.
I just know when people were talking about it, when I would go to parties in Los Angeles, people after working a long week, they would say, "Oh, he's going to do a Western next." Someone would say he's going to do a sci-fi next. Like, well, he did do Interstellar was his next one, so they were right about that. But I mean, if he's trying to knock off genres, then Western would make sense. So. Yeah. Although I don't know what he'd do. Excuse me. I mean, I'm sure he'll find some way to make it a very Nolan-esque movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not a, you know, story that everyone knows. But man, I this movie, I think, is wonderful. I do think...
I totally agree with you. I mean, it's not... It's one of those movies, I mean, I walked out of the theater and I was almost speechless because I mean, I had a smile on my face. I couldn't comprehend what just happened, you know?
I wish it was a little, for the first time ever, I wished it was a little longer.
Yeah.
Maybe even like just 10 minutes longer would have been nice.
Mm-hmm.
I kept wanting to see, like, well, what happens when the Germans finally push in? I'm like, well, are we ever going to see that? But I don't know how far they got in to... The actual, I don't know, like in the actual event, I don't know how far they penetrated before the evacuation took place, but yeah, so I mean, it would have been really cool to see some how Nolan would have handled the fight, like an actual firefight between the Germans and the English. What would have happened? So that would have been really cool, but it's, I think the way he did it was brilliant. It's almost like making a Rocky movie without ever showing a fight in the ring, and still making it a very internal struggle, a very good movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost one of those accomplishments. So
yeah, that was pretty good. That's pretty good.
So I'm very happy with. I will watch it again several times, I'm sure, before.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to catch it again in 70D, and I'm gonna try to catch it in 70D IMAX. 70D. I'm so tired. 70D is a camera. 70 millimeter in IMAX. I've not seen it in IMAX. I think seeing it in IMAX would be the way to watch it, only because like war is larger than life event. You know what I mean? Especially World War II. Like, we haven't seen terror and evil on that scale ever since then. So that's what he does. You know, it's. That's what Nolan does, especially in Dunkirk. I mean, this is. I even heard someone say when I was leaving. I saw it with my payroll guy, and we were standing behind someone who was saying, "Yeah, it really is an intimate epic." I've never heard that term before, an intimate epic, but I mean, it got me thinking. Yeah, that actually was told in a very intimate way. We followed a few soldiers, and that was it. But it's.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot of dialogue. There wasn't a lot of. I mean, Harry Styles from One Direction did okay. Everyone wanted to see how he did.
Yeah, and I think the reason Nolan picked him was, I think what Nolan was saying is he had a little bit of realness to him, you know, like it was a genuine portrayal, you know.
There you go.
Fear.
I had read that he didn't know who he was when he cast him, or didn't realize how big he was. I don't think that's true. That cannot possibly be true.
I heard that too, and I don't know. I could see that. I could see Christopher Nolan knowing what One Direction is, but not knowing who they are, you know?
Well, his kids would know who he was. His kids would know who One Direction were, though, so there's no way that he can pass for that. No way. Interstellar. I'm sorry, Dunkirk. See how tired I am? Dunkirk. Sorry, Dunkirk. Two thumbs up, absolutely.
Yeah.
I say this because I think, going back to my original question, is it his masterpiece? I mean, I don't think it's the movie that best exemplifies what Nolan is, I think it's going to be a better with time.
Yeah.
Especially if we see a director's cut or a longer version that is able to shed some light. And especially with my favorite part of the movie was the ending, and we can't talk about that. I don't. There's no spoilers, but those last don't reveal anything specific. But those last few minutes, the impact
Yeah.
was so amazing for me. It was almost one of those like, oh my God! Like it was almost one of those like not. I don't mean impact like you're watching the first Saw and you realize that who the killer is. And you're like, oh my God, he was there the whole time. It's not one of those impact. It's impact of like, I'm reeling from what just happened. I'm reeling from what I just saw. Like the last
Exactly.
10 minutes.
And I think that's why I was so speechless, just because I was in awe, of the ending. And I mean, it was great. It was.
I think the ending is the most powerful part of the movie, which is saying something because there are other parts that are incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, especially that opening with the opening when the one soldier is able to make it away from the gunfire alive, and then he sees the other soldier like burying somebody, which comes into play later, much later. But yeah, it's, I mean, so there's not a lot of dialogue. It's, wonderful. This is definitely gonna end up on the Clark Hayes list one day. But speaking of Clark Hayes, I took a little off the beaten path, and I had a couple of different ideas in mind, but I ended up settling on The Boy in the Striped Pajamas for the Clark Hayes list of movies you should probably watch and or be able to reference. The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, 2008, directed by Mark Herman. We always give reasons with Clark Hayes why you should watch a movie, why it absolutely should be watched. Very well-directed movie with a very strong sense of pacing, and the ending builds beautifully. Just like
Oh.
Dunkirk, the ending, it's a very slow build, and you're going to understand where the ending's going when I give the description, but it's not one of those like, oh, you shouldn't have ruined it for me. It's one of those like the impact is incredible when you see it. But it's a movie about Germany, but it's told from the other side that we ever see. It's not told from our point of view or anyone's point of
Yeah.
view that we ever are asked to sympathize with. It's told from a German point of view, which is really interesting because we barely ever see those ever.
Yeah.
And there are camera angles that there's a dinner scene in particular that the Nolan or not Nolan, God, Nolan, God, so tired. Director Mark Herman puts the camera at eye level at the table, so like you literally feel like you're at the conversation at the table when they're talking about some of these things, and the description's gonna what I'm talking about. So, and it's about a young boy named Bruno in 1940. His father, David Thelwys, I don't know, Thelwys, is a high-ranking officer in the Third Reich, and when he gets a promotion within the German army, he moves his family to a new house in the countryside to accept the job. Bruno can see people in striped clothing from his window and is given a routine answer when he asks his parents why. He meets another boy named Schmoll, who is on the other side of the fence. Neither boy really understand what's going on, the enormity of the situation, and fueled by the desire to be, for boys to be boys and want to play together, they devise a plan to get Bruno on the other side of the fence to find the answers. And you can see where that's going with the whole, it's when.
I'm gonna stop you there. I cried the first time I watched this movie.
It's powerful, isn't it?
Exactly. It really is. And like you said, you can tell where it's going throughout the whole movie. You don't fall in love with the character, but you fall in love with his childlike wonder.
Yeah, you took the word right out. I was gonna say that the next part of is the wonder, and the other scene I wanted to really put on the map for you when you watch this movie is when his mother Vera, played by Vera Farmiga, I just didn't say that right, or from Farmiga or however you say that, finds out what's really going on. The work I'm using air quotes, the work her husband is doing, and that destroys her. It, you know, when she finally understands what that camp is, like, it's terrifying to her, and her son is there, and her family is there, and it's just, oh my god, the eventual slow and deliberate build of the end is wonderful in the same way that it's terrible. It's because it's a terrible thing, but it's done so well that I don't know why this guy hasn't made it, he hasn't directed another movie since, but he definitely deserves to. So that's the entry for the Clark Hayes list, is The Boy in the Striped Pajamas from 2008. Definitely pick that up. It's very, I'm sure it's very cheap. If you go,
And if you, I mean, hey, if you stream Netflix, it's on Netflix.
Is it on Netflix right now?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So there you go. It is available on Netflix for free. So a very powerful movie told from the other point of view. Another facet of the war that we don't usually like to talk about. Well, we don't. I mean, it's a very dark time in human history.
So. Exactly. I mean, it's horrible. It really is.
Thank you for tuning in to the Nolan Dunkirk episode. There was a lot of information there. Nolan has quite the legacy to unpack, and we just scratched the surface. I love that man. I think he makes great movies. He's capable. I don't think he's among the greats yet, but he's capable of being there, and I sure hope he gets there, and I think he's almost there. So we will see. But you can reach you can find out what's going on with the show at Love Cinema Pod. I'm at Grayson Maxwell 1. Nick, have you got a Twitter handle in the last week?
NMore1776.
1776. He loves America, and that's why he put it as his Twitter handle is.
Right. Bald Eagles and Budweiser.
Bald Eagles and Budweiser. That is so funny. Bald Eagles and Budweiser. That's excellent, man. Awesome.
I stole that from a movie, actually.
Which movie did you steal it from? Dang,
it's,
man.
It's not 21. It's,
Project X, is that it? No?
No. It's a movie with Miles Teller and it's the guy's 21st birthday.
It's called A 21 and Over.
21 and Over, yeah.
Yeah, it's A 21 and Over, yeah. That's actually a really funny movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie also.
I really enjoyed that movie. That's where you can reach Nick, get all of his, you can see all of his thoughts on whatever he's watching at 4 in the morning.
very true.
Thank you for listening to the episode, and I hope you enjoy Dunkirk. And whatever Nolan movie you can get your hands on, you should definitely watch it.